Talking Finance with Brian Hirsch, making sense of your finance.
We continue the conversation on the Talking Point. Welcome to the second hour of the show. And of course, coming up in this hour, we're going to be talking finance with Brian Hirsch. I see lots of you still responding to the deregistration. The failed deregistration bid, rather, of the ANC against the MK party. We'll bring you some of those voice notes as the hour progresses, wherever we find an opportunity to do that. But Brian Hirsch is already seated. He's in studio. And we've already played his jingle, so why not? Brian, good morning.
Yes, good morning. And 30 years and still going. Energized. I'm still not going to sell any of my energy to Eskom.
You know,
they want to pay me 120 days. Would you take a risk?
No, I wouldn't.
Okay. COD, COD.
So one of our listeners was saying in the last hour, just after this court matter, that they believe Jacob Zuma's too old and he must stay home now, you know, take care of his grandkids and not be running around the streets campaigning. And my view is that, look, if he feels he's got the energy for it, why not? And I imagine that you have a similar work ethic because... Yes, you're getting a bit older, you know. You just have one or two grey hairs now.
What?
But you still work
Sorry?
As hard.
Where? You can actually see a grey.
I hope some people are tuning in on the stream. You know, only one or two hairs.
You know, we all work hard. And there's all categories. You know, there's an ingredients to working. And you've got to believe in what you do. You've got to have confidence. People have got to trust you. You've got to have knowledge. But then there's other characteristics. Energy, enthusiasm. You've got to be totally innovative. And you've got to be totally uninhibited. And God gave me those gifts. I'm very, very fortunate. And, you know, just love what I do.
And you're not slowing down. And I guess part of the reason why I'm even bringing it up is that, you know, it's different for every individual. Some people just have that extra zeal for life, have that energy just to keep going, even when others don't understand how they do it.
It's a fantastic gift. And, and my staff try when I'm not looking to take one of my Duracell batteries out. But they can't get them. They can't keep up with me. You know, it's a shame. What can I say?
You see, it's all in the mind. Mind over matter. If you believe that you still got the energy, you can still do it, then why not?
Yeah.
Is really the question. All right. So it is the last Tuesday of the month, Brian, which means that you and I are dealing with some of the big questions that were asked throughout the month. Oh, tax season is almost done. You know, the cutoff, of course, has come and gone. Some of us are still getting notices from SARS. Ooh, trouble, trouble. And I see that it's also one of the questions that you were dealing with. But before we get to issues of tax and savings, let's begin with this. People want to know where they can put their money. And I never get over the fact that there's so much interest in people wanting to make investments that can be worthwhile for them. They're always looking for good investment advice, and this month is no different. And the question is really around property and property right now. Is it a good investment?
Well, you've got to firstly differentiate between what I call a lifestyle property, which is the home you own, and then investment property. I mean, that's very important. I mean, any home you live in, any home used by your family is what I consider a lifestyle property. An investment is where you get a return. And if you're just paying expenses to a property, you're not getting that return. But if you're going to invest in property and you pay fully for the property, then you need to compare the net return, which is calculated as follows. You get your gross rental and you... Less from that gross rental, you've got to deduct levies and you've got to deduct rates and taxes, which is normally the responsibility of the owner. Then you've got to deduct from this, compare this to the return. So if you're getting 15,000 rand rent, what are your costs? Then you've got to say, well, this is how much I invested, and you've got to compare this to another investment. That's if you're paying cash for a property. I don't think investment property, and I speak under correction because there are always some places, I don't think paying cash for a property in investment property is the answer. I think gearing the property, where you take a bond and you make sure that the tenant that you're going to have not only pays the bond costs, but also can pay the rates and tax, cover your rates and taxes and your levies. So you've got to do that calculation of how much do you need to put into the property and how much bond can you take. And then you get the tenant to pay the bond. But you've also got to be aware, interest rate, if anyone had rented a property 3 years ago, interest rates have gone up substantially. Your bond costs have gone up, rates have gone up. So you've got to build that into. You've also got to understand their maintenance costs. And you've also got to understand that someone has got to let the property. There may be an agent involved. And then you may also have months where you don't have anyone in that property when one tenant comes before another tenant comes. And I think that's where you make money. But you've got to do those numbers very carefully. Property is about position, 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 not where just buying any property. Better to buy a property at a lower price in a good area that maybe you can do some alterations to, than to pay the top price in a lower in an area where there isn't the growth that you wanted. So people have made money over the years out of property, but there are times when it becomes very difficult. So in summary, your lifestyle property is not an investment. It's where you live. One day, if you sell it, you're going to go to a new home. If you're going to invest in a property, I don't think it's cash is the answer. There are lots of property funds you can buy into, giving returns of 8-9%, where you have no hassles. Be very careful when you go into investment properties.
Brian, that sort of goes against, you know, this whole notion of responsibility that we're told, because I know that for most people, the goal is to, number one, secure a property, number two, pay it off as quickly as possible. So if somebody has the cash that they can put into a property, often that's what they will do, because we're told you must have property to your name. Any property that you can get your hands on and that you can pay off as soon as possible, that's what you must do.
Kathy, your home, your lifestyle home, pay off as quickly as you can. You can't write the bond off against income. When you have an investment property, I don't believe that at all. I don't believe an investment property should be paid off. I think an investment property should retain the expenses, the bond expenses, but you just need to balance what those costs are. The difference is you're not going to get any income from that property. But you know, property is the cornerstone of any investment plan. Property and equities is where you're going to get your growth from. Where you have money market investments and other money instruments, you're not going to get growth. You're not even going to beat inflation after tax, because remember, all these properties that you may be investing in, you've got to pay tax. So the answer is not to pay off the property. The answer is for the property, you've put the deposit down, that is now, and that deposit depends on how much bond you can take to do your calculations of what your costs are going to be for. You want to cover all those costs, but don't pay it off, because let the tenant pay off. You can write those expenses against tax. There's no tax. And ultimately, one day when you sell the property, you won't pay income tax, you'll pay capital gains. So it's that's how you make money. And all the money being made over the years is not paying the properties off. It's having bonds, but making sure that your monthly expense is covered by the income coming in, and taking into account all those expenses, including, as I said, the months you may not have a tenant and maintenance. That's how you make money. You don't just make money by getting a property, have a tenant, pay it off, because most people then don't pay the tax on the income. So I'm saying that's the way money is made in property. Do not pay an investment property off. Rather, if you've got the money, buy a second property and do the same thing and build up properties where the tenant is covering all your costs.
Sometimes you can be so smart, Brian.
Thanks, Kathy.
Only
Kathy.
Sometimes.
Yeah, you know, this grey hair. I mean, only two. Well, and tell our listeners, it's not that I only have two hairs on my head. I have a lot more hair than just two.
We're going to take a quick break. We're talking finance with Brian Hirsch.
Talking finance with Brian Hirsch, making sense of your finance.
It's the last Tuesday of the month, so we're taking your questions and we're dealing with some of the frequently asked questions for the month. Brian Hirsch is in studio. We've kicked off with property, and I really like the explanation that Brian has given for why property is a good investment, and if you're going to invest in property, how you should try go about doing that. It's a really clear explanation, at least as far as I'm concerned. Okay, Brian. The next one is important components, especially when one is thinking about going into retirement? What do they need to have in place?
Okay, can I just say one thing on property? When you own your own property and it's a lifestyle asset, you want to pay it off as quickly as possible. So don't get confused about investment property and lifestyle property. Right, let's talk about retirement. A lot of people have come to me now, they're planning to retire, and they've said to me, this is how much money they're going to come into. And then they say, and that money they're going to pay off their home. Now, at retirement, it's absolutely critical that three things are in place. One, your home is paid off. Two, you have a good healthcare program in place. And three, you have no debt. Hopefully, many of us, when we reach retirement also, are not in a position that we still don't have to pay for debt or we still have to pay for education. But the danger of taking your pension money and paying off your bonds, that means you're not going to have that money to provide you with an income. And remember, you've now been paying this expense while you've been working. Now you've paid it off. But, you know, at retirement, you need income. Where's the income going to come from? So what you need to do planning for retirement is work out not only about how you invest for retirement, how are you going to make sure that when you get to retirement, your home is paid for. So when you get your pension, wherever it may come from, or you've got your other investments, or you've got a property, and that's at that particular point in time, you may have paid off the property, the investment properties, because now you're going to need income. And so the income coming from those investment properties at retirement will add to your retirement money. So it's important that you don't use your pension money to pay off your debt at retirement. That debt needs to be paid off before retirement, just before. And when you get all your other investments, that's what you're going to live on. And that's what people are doing incorrectly. They're getting to retirement, still owing money. They're taking their pension money. They want to do other things and spend that money. Your retirement money is really not for spending. Your retirement money is to provide you with an income, because the dangers ahead of you is, one, retirement inflation. And let's understand, retirement inflation is a lot higher than the CPI we hear about. This week, figures came out at 5.6%, or was it last week? Retirement inflation with food, transport, medical aid is a lot more than 5.6%. So bear that in mind. Absolutely critical. And maybe this is a bit late for people close to retirement, but certainly for younger people, many of our listeners, their children and family are not listening to this program. Get the message through to them that your monies at retirement are not to pay off debt. It's there to provide you with income. You will then have what we call financial freedom in retirement to pursue the things that you always hope for. That will make your golden years really golden, whereas so many people are saying, at retirement, I'm not having golden years because I don't have any money, because I had to pay off all my loans and my debts and pay off my cars and everything like that.
You know, Brian, as you're speaking, it reminded me of something that I've been hearing a lot of people sort of my age group talk about. And it's that when they are switching jobs, right, and whatever money they have that has accumulated with the Provident Fund, etc. So instead of putting it under preservation, what people are doing is withdrawing that money, and with a plan either of maybe living off it while they transition between jobs. Some are taking it to pay off or contribute towards their home loans, or even their car repayments. Is that a good idea? That we should be doing that? Should we be using that money in that way?
Well, you've got to calculate what your tax is, because remember, if you withdraw from a pension or provident fund, and the two-pot system coming in gives you some allowance, but if you withdraw from, if you withdraw when you're leaving jobs, two things are happening. Once you're older, so let's say you start work at 25, you're now 33, and you withdraw, that money that you had paid at 25 to 33 is going to be worth so much more at a retirement because of compound interest. You're going to pay tax. You're now a bit older, yes, but you need those sums need to be done before you just do it and withdraw. If you're changing jobs, then you need to do the calculation. How much extra am I going to have to put? I mean, I can do the numbers. Someone who takes their money, contributes to from 25, just using 33 as an example, and then leaves that money until retirement, someone who starts at 33, you're going to have to virtually put in double than what you took out, and you've got to look at the tax components. So it's important that you get advice, and that's all I can say on this program. When you're doing these type of things, just sit down with someone who can advise you whether you're doing the right thing. There are occasions when it makes sense. Certainly, if it's under, if you're withdrawing and your withdrawal benefit is 200,000 and you're going to pay tax of around about 30,000, so you're coming out with 170 and you're going to pay your debt and thing, but then you've got to make sure that you now increase the amount you're going to be saving, because you're going to be saving on your bond. Where's that money going to go? So, and maybe it should also be going, the amount you saved, going back into your bond to pay that lifestyle property off sooner. So you need, it's you need to say, you know, I can't just give, because it doesn't, not every bit of advice suits is right for everyone. Everyone's circumstances are different. But I can't emphasize more. Get advice. Get advice from a registered financial planner to see whether you're on the right track and what you should be doing.
All right, Brian, thank you for that. It's 10:30, time for the latest news headlines. Of course, we will continue with some of the questions of the month. I also am noting the questions that you're putting through on the WhatsApp line.
You can never ask a stupid question. You can only get a stupid answer from me.
Roll another. If you have a life insurance but you are smoking weed only, do they consider you as a smoker or a non-smoker?
He wants to know that if you smoke weed, marijuana.
But I can tell you, if you tell the insurance company, I don't smoke but I smoke weed and marijuana, I think they may either load you or decline you.
He really is high, man.
Shoop, shoop, shooby doo ah.
Get jiggy with it. Skippity bebop.
The Talking Point with Kathy Motlatlana. Weekdays, 9 a.m. till midday.
It's always fun in games when Brian is in the room.
I never hear my voice back. And my wife always says, you speak too quickly. And there, when I heard my answers, I better slow down, didn't I?
You also think you speak too quickly.
I can't believe some of my answers there.
It's because, you know, all of this information is too much. And it just all rushes to your brain. And you're just like, so much to say, such little time.
So I shall now slow down.
No, absolutely not. I don't like that, Brian. I like fast Brian. Okay, so Brian, I want to deal with this follow-up question. This is just on the issue of investment properties. And then I want us to talk about tax-free savings before I take the phone lines, because I see the number of listeners are just sort of adding up as we continue the conversation. But here's the WhatsApp voice note, and it's specifically on that issue of property.
Good morning, Brian and Kathy. It's Nancy from KZN. Should an investment property be bought in your personal name or in a trust? And if it's in a trust, can you discuss a little bit about it, please? Thank you.
Kathy, you know, everyone thinks that trusts are the answer. The problem with trusts is today in South Africa, there's enormous regulations under trusts. The capital gains and tax components of a trust are a lot higher. However, there is what is called attribution, which means you can attribute whatever the income is in the trust to individuals who are beneficiaries and pay tax in their names. This could change in the years to come. I don't agree. And there may be reasons. And let me always say, it's horses for courses. This answer is not maybe for everyone. There is a time to use a trust for protection. But if I'm buying properties, and I have a few, they're all registered in my personal name, I pay taxes in my personal name, I can tell you I've still got bonds going on those properties, they're covered, and all I've done is, as I've had more income available, I've managed to, and particularly in this point in time, buy another property, because today people are not selling properties, they're just giving them away. So Kathy, I don't, unless your circumstances are specific, I don't believe in paying trust, but believe in a property should be registered in trust. but I do make the important to make the statement that it's horses for courses. Certainly, in most instances, I would say buy it in your own name, and you're entitled to investments in your own name and pay taxes and accordingly in the name of you personally.
What would you put in a trust then?
Well, if I'm trying to protect the assets, you know, if I've got younger children who are going to inherit, then I would put it in a trust because they can't inherit. If I'm looking at long-term estate duty and the savings in estate duty, and remember, families, a husband and wife, get the first 7 million rand free of death duties. So if I'm looking at something a lot more than that and more sophisticated, I probably may have buy in a company and the shareholder of that company would be a trust. But I don't want to go into that because that's much more complicated to explain and to answer, Kathy. So let me put it this way. I, in most instances today, going forward, and I'm not saying people who have properties in trusts should make any changes, but going forward, the use of a trust is not what it used to be. There's so much regulations now required, auditing fees, and extra costs that you're incurring by having a trust.
Okay. All right. Thanks for that, Brian. Tax savings. Are tax savings the same as if I contribute to a retirement annuity or a tax-free saving?
Okay, so let me make both of those components, which make up savings, the investments within the tax-free savings or the retirement annuity are tax-free. There's no tax payable on dividends. There's no tax payable on interest, on rent, property income, on anything, on capital gains. However, a retirement annuity contribution comes off your gross taxable income. So if you're earning 20,000 Rand and you're putting 1,000 Rand to a retirement annuity, you are only being taxed on 19,000. You're getting the benefit of that tax deduction. If you want to put into tax-free saving, you first got to pay tax on 20,000, which is 1,000 Rand more than the 19,000 I just mentioned, and then make an investment into tax-free savings. The difference is tax-free savings up to 500,000, and that amount will be increased in the years to come. You're allowed 36,000 Rand a year, and you're allowed to have 500,000, and that's now been going for about 4 or 5 years. So people may be nearly at 200,000. When you receive that money, it's all tax-free, and it comes out in cash. Whereas retirement annuity, you can only get one-third in cash. The balance provides a pension of the two-thirds. So is it an or? No, it's an and. Do a retirement annuity to save tax, and if you save the tax, take the money you've saved in the tax and put into tax-free saving. That'll give you the best way of creating retirement monies.
All right. Thanks for that, Brian. Let me go to Lisiba. Lisiba, you're in Modimolle. Good morning.
Good morning, Sis Kathy, and good morning to Brian.
Morning, Lisiba.
Brian, I'd like your advice on this. So I have a paid-up lifestyle property in my home, but I'd like to use it to raise funds. So mortgage it to raise funds because I have a piece of land where I can buy rental build rental property, basically. Can I mortgage my house against that, raising capital for such property?
Yes, absolutely, because you're now going to use that money to go into investment property. But then any surplus must go back into your home to pay off the bond. Paying off the bond in your home, not the lifestyle property. So you need to do the question, you need to do the calculations. I'm going to take money out of my home. Now I've got to pay that bond going forward. There's no tax deductible. I'm going to put the money into a property. I'm going to develop this piece of land. I'm then got to now, how much am I going to get? What income am I going to get in? What are my expenses going to be? Take into all account. Neutralize that. Make sure that you're covering it. And then all the monies that in future, pay off your bond. Do not pay off the investment property. There's nothing wrong with using your home bond, if you've got an access bond, to make investment properties. But you must pay off your bond in your home as quickly as possible. Let your tenant pay off the all the costs in your investment property.
All right, thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call, Lisiba out in Modimolle. Let me take a quick break and then I'm going to continue with more of the callers that are on the line and, of course, the questions you're sending through on WhatsApp. Remember, you can also dial in at the studio line 086-000-2032. Any specific questions you may have for Brian, 086-000-2032. On the WhatsApp voice note line, 0614-104-107.
Talking Finance with Brian Hirsch, making sense of your finance.
All right, we continue taking your questions on Talking Finance with Brian Hirsch. You're listening to The Talking Point on SAFM. Brian, I've got some questions for you on the WhatsApp line. All right, but before I go to those questions, let's deal with our fourth question here of the month. Professionals who've recently qualified and are now in employment, what type of disability cover should they look at? Yep. Should we even have disability cover, Brian?
Well, Kathy, you know, you study, you've now got to work going ahead. What happens if you get disabled? What happens if you can't earn income? What do you do about that?
Isn't that living in fear?
Well, but do you insure your motor car? Do you insure your home? Isn't that living in fear? So I think the most important thing is to have, you know, you may not need life insurance. You may be young and you don't have any dependents. But I think disability comes in three forms. Well, firstly, the definition of disability. If you're disabled from your own income, for which you fitted for your training, your status, your knowledge and ability, then you may be temporarily or permanently disabled. Permanent disability means you're virtually a vegetable and you can't do your own or similar occupation. But income disability covers your loss of income. And maybe your pension fund has that for you if you're employed by a company. But as a professional, think about a lawyer, think about a doctor who studied all these years and now a doctor can't operate anymore, a surgeon. He's lost the use of a hand. I mean, how are you going to survive? So income protection, replacement of income is critical. The younger you are, the lower the cost. And also, in some instances, you may not need income cover for 7 days if you're off work for 7 days. You may need cover for 60 or only after 60 or 90 days, which means your premium comes down. So I think income protection is very critical, replacement of income. I think dreaded disease insurance in the event of a critical illness, because today you're fearing younger people getting cancer. You know, your medical aid will cover you for the procedure, but it doesn't cover you for any loss of income for a period of time. So dreaded disease is an important type of insurance. And, you know, it's part of your medical plan. When you're planning and looking at your medical aid, which plan should I be in? Have a look, inclusive. What disability should I have? Because I understand my medical and hospitalization, but what happens if I can't earn income? Particularly if, you know, even a tradesman who may use their hands to do certain jobs. What happens if they can't work? I mean, how do they support their family? So I think people are underinsured in this country, both when it comes to life insurance and when it comes to disability.
Okay. All right. Fair enough, Brian. Thanks for that. Colin, you're in Cape Town. Good morning.
Good morning, Kathy. Good morning, Brian.
Morning, Colin.
Brian, this may not be today's topic, but I've been wanting to phone you for a long, long time. Brian, home insurance. Insure your home. Let's say you insure for 1.5 and you're paying a premium for the last 15 years already, but the premiums are going up every year, 6-7%, the premium of your house insurance. But your assured sum stays the same, Brian. You know, 1.5. So, in other words, in 20 years' time, my home will still be 1.5, for argument's sake. But the premium will be almost doubled or tripled. So, how come that is like that, Brian? And because the municipality, they put your valuation of your property up when they put rates up. But the insurance companies don't do it, Brian. So in other words, let's say I'm going to pay for another 30 years. Will I be able to buy a house for 1 point or rebuild a house if anything happens to my house, fire or storm or whatever, for 1.5, Brian? Can I listen on the radio?
You can. Colin, you're now talking about the buildings itself. You're not talking about the contents. Normally, when premiums go up, they automatically adjust the value of your property upwards. So I've never heard of premiums going up without adjustments. And one needs to be very careful because it's not the market value of your property. It is the rebuilding of your property, or either fully or partially. And what people don't realize, maybe a fire won't destroy the whole house. But if you insure it for 1.5 and the insurance company says the property is worth 3 million and you should have insured for 3 million, they're going to pay you half your claim. And that's one of the that can break a family if you've now got to pay. You know, if you lose an item under an all risk or householders, you'll feel bad about it, but it won't break the family. So you've got to, and it's not up to the insurance companies. They don't know the value of your property. Forget the rates and taxes. It's got irrelevant. It's what will it cost to replace your home with new bricks, new doors, new windows. You've got to make sure that your house is fully insured. Colin, the most important thing is, you know, your home is really one of the major assets anyone has in their lifetime. And the premiums, the premium is not that high versus some of the other premiums if you compare it to motor insurance or all risks or even householders, which covers the contents. The one area, and particularly people who've got bonds with building societies. No, Kathy, that just shows how old I am, building societies. And does anyone, my grandchildren said to me the other day, what's that you looking at when I looked at a phone book? I said, I'm looking for a number. They said to me, don't be ridiculous, just go into Google. Anyway, so they're building societies. Sorry for that little blip. But, you know, you need to make sure that your home is insured. And those who have bonds with banks and other institutions, remember, they don't know. They just increase it slightly. You need to make sure that in the event of a loss, partial or total, your property is insured for the replacement value of that property. You're not going to accept old doors to come into your home when you need to put new doors in. Light fittings, all your other fittings in the kitchens, anything that if you sell the home or you turn it upside down, that remain. You know, if you turn a home upside down, you've got a lot of things that will fall to the floor. That is not under your house owner's policy. So, Colin, the question to you is, yes, premiums do go up. I mean, there's a lot more flood damages now. There's a lot more, you know, globally reinsurers are charging more because what's happened globally, premiums have gone up. If you think about it across the board, yeah, you pay more for your medical aid, you're paying more for food. If you have to pay a little bit more, and it really is a little bit more because the cost of house owner's insurance is not exorbitant unless there are reasons, and there's always the exception. So I always try and cover my back in case I get someone who phones me. If you've got a home with thatch, there's an additional premium. And it's also your responsibility to make sure you maintain that property, particularly when it comes to storm damage. So many people don't maintain their roofs. They have damage. The insurance company repudiate the claim. I had the short-term ombudsman, Edith Texeria McKinnon, on TV with me last week. She, from the ombudsman's office, the number of claims they get that are repudiated because people haven't maintained their homes.
All right.
So I know I went a bit further, Kathy, but I just wanted to give our listeners a little bit more information. Check the values of your home owner's policy. Mm-hmm. What are your buildings insured for? Don't be underinsured, because that is the one area that could be an absolute catastrophe if there was a loss. And don't say the words, it can never happen to me.
Okay.
It can.
Brian, thank you for that. This came through from Mbongeni on the WhatsApp line. Mbongeni says, I want to make a will for my family, but somebody has advised me not to do it through the bank. He told me to make my children beneficiaries to avoid the middleman. Now I'm getting completely confused. Please help. What would you recommend?
Well, Bongi, I agree with that bit of advice, but in some circumstances, it does make sense to make use of a bank or a financial institution. If you're a married man, and then a husband can make the wife the executor, the wife could make the husband executor. Even though they won't be able to do the job, they will have to appoint someone. The advantage is that they will be able to negotiate executor's fees. Most financial institutions, as the tariff says, if you die, they will charge 3.5% plus VAT to execute the will. And sometimes, you know, if your wife, for example, in your case, Mongi, if your wife is the executor and she went to an attorney or she even went to a bank, she could negotiate the fee they would then act as an agent. So there are some times that maybe it may make sense to make a family member, older children, certainly for younger children, you do need a will. And I don't know what the age of your children are, but for anyone who's got children under the age of 18 who you don't want your children to inherit at age 18, because that's the years they should be studying and thinking about their careers. But so there's every different reason. But I'm a firm believer in appointing someone, and in many cases, children are now professionals. They can act as the executor. They may not do the work and have to appoint a professional, but they can negotiate the fees. And also, if the executor is not doing they're not doing a good job, if you appoint an institution and they're doing a lousy job, the only person that can fire that institution was firstly the deceased, or you have to go to the master. It's very, very difficult to do. So everyone's circumstances, again, and I repeat this, are different, but there are grounds and reasons why you could appoint. And even if you appointed a bank or a financial institution or a lawyer and accountant, you could write into the will and I saw that only yesterday, that the fee is limited to 1.75% and a maximum amount, rather than just have an open-ended amount of paying an executor 3.5%.
All right. Thanks for that, Brian. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick break and then I'm back with more of your questions for Brian. Mpondo Mbopo, we'll kick it off with you.
Talking Finance with Brian Hirsch, making sense of your finance.
Okay. So, yeah, lots of your questions is coming through. Brian, we might have to do a segment on wills again, because suddenly it's just like influx of messages and dramas of executors and so I think we might have to revisit that issue based on the question that we received.
Okay.
Mpoyo in Limpopo, good morning.
Good morning, Chris. How are you and Brian?
Good, thank you.
Well, Kathy can't answer for me, but Mpoyo, I'm well.
Just two quick questions. I used to work and then I went back to school. I had to stop my retirement annuity contributions, and then now I'm back into employment. So I just wanted to check, is it possible for me to transfer the funds to a new company and then I resume that? And then the second question is, let's say, for instance, I have bought a car, and then for some reason I don't feel the car anymore or I don't want the car anymore. Is it possible for me to just stop? I'm just talking in case maybe say I'm a contract worker and then for some reason I lose employment or I don't have any income to pay for that car. What implication besides being blacklisted?
Well, let me just first, if you stop paying for the car, the finance house is going to come after you. And if you sell the car, and I don't know if you'll get enough to cover all the finance charges, because although they'll have to rebate interest, you know, often you find that it does not cover the amount owing to an institution, they will come after you. So the answer to that question is you need to check out how much you owe, how much can you get for the car, and then if there's a shortfall, you need to talk to the finance company, how are you going to settle that shortfall? Don't leave it, because they will take judgment against you. On the second question, why do you want to transfer the retirement annuity to another company? Why can't you go back to that company that you had the retirement annuity with and say to them, well, I'd like to reinstate the retirement annuity? You also need to find out what the penalties were when you stopped it. You need to get that information from that company that you got the RA with and see what the benefits are of reinstating with them before you start moving companies. But one can move a retirement. You need what's called a section 14. You get a section 14. It takes a bit of time between the company that the retirement is with and the company that you're moving to. The actuaries have to sign off that the correct figures are being paid across, which protects you. It could take take anything up to 3 months, but you can do that. But I would first go back to the company that I had the retirement annuity with, check what the penalty was, because there was no doubt about it. There was a penalty attached and debited against your retirement annuity, and how, by reinstating it, when you're not going to pay new commission to a new broker, how will that then affect that debit that was that penalty that was created? Check with that company first. But then remember, retirement annuity is purely the name of what I call a room. You've then got to determine, how old are you?
Now I'm 34.
Okay, so you're young. So you've got a long time to go to retirement. You want to make sure that the money that you put into the retirement annuity is going into growth assets, growth investments. 45% global investments and 55% needs to stay here, of which 25% will have to be in money market instruments. But be as growth orientated as you can. You've got 21 years, which is 855, before you can withdraw. You can take on, you can really take on the world and be invested in the top investments that are going to provide growth over the next 21 years.
Thanks a lot, Roy.
Thanks, Upa.
All right.
Just be very careful. Anyone who stops paying for anything, you need to first go and talk to the finance company, because they will take judgment. They don't have any relationship in most cases with you personally, and they just it's all done by computerization and handing over monies to collectors, and you don't. The last thing you want to do is have judgment taken. So if you can't pay for any outstanding bills or anything you owe money on, talk to the people you owe money with and come to some sort of plan and some sort of arrangement so they understand what you're going through. Otherwise, you will run into problems which will be really difficult to undo in the years to come.
All right. Paul, thanks for that question. Brian, I'm going to play just this WhatsApp voice note, and it's on the issue of investment properties again.
Morning, Kathy. It's Vugani from Durban. I don't agree 100% with the Brian Hirsch that you shouldn't pay up the investment property. I believe that I should pay it up as quickly as possible, and then use the amount that I'm getting for rent from that property to pay the next property as quickly as possible, so that by the time I retire, all the money that comes from the rental properties just goes to my pocket to look after me until my final days. Thank you.
Look, I'd love to debate with you, but let me say this. You say pay off the property and then use the rental. Where are you going to get the deposit for the property? Where are you going to for the second property? How are you going to raise from the rental? The rental comes in monthly. So you should use your existing property to borrow. Now I've paid it off, rather take money out of that property, so you go back into finance and put it into the new property, and let your tenants pay off the property for you. Because if you get income, you're going to put it into the new property, but you're going to pay tax on that income. So just understand, you need to look at those calculations. So whilst you don't agree, and there's always situations where that are different to, I'm talking the very general situation, I would never pay off an investment property. Yes, at retirement, you definitely want your properties paid off, because that's where your income's going to come from. But this is while the build-up, and it's called the power of gearing. Lovely to have someone who doesn't agree with me. Love it. Always love it.
Brian, your contact details.
No, I'm going away this weekend, and I'll only be back on Tuesday. So rather leave my contact details for this week. We'll give them again next week.
All right. And of course, if we haven't been able to get to your question, I do apologize for that. Okay, it's 11 o'clock. Time for the latest news.